So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 23. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week, it's all about Mon Mothma. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello, I'm back. Did you miss me?
Yes, we did. And also back this week, too, is Eric.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome back, Eric.
Great to be back. Did you miss me?
I missed you, Eric.
I missed you, Danya. I missed Mikey. I missed this show. It has been a little while since I've been on, all the way back at Indie PopCon. Feels like years ago at this point. The month has just been filled with crazy stuff.
I feel you there.
I know.
And you were just at SDCC, weren't you, Danya?
I was, mm-hmm. Yes. I just got back
You went
back
all
yesterday.
The way back home, and then you went all the way to California. And now, are you back in the UK?
I am. I got back yesterday. I am severely jet-lagged. Oh, man.
Crazy. So, obviously, we missed a lot of people. But if you want to get involved in our conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @rradiopodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. Or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. So, guys, I missed you. I miss both of you so dearly.
I missed you. I am impressed, though, that you manned the fort without us. You did such a good job. And the podcast is still here. You didn't burn anything down.
You haven't really seen the whole place yet. There's a couple burn marks, I will tell you.
There's like a black scorch mark.
There's that one room in the background that door's locked right now. We can't go in there.
just ignore it. Just ignore it. You know, while you guys have been gone, there's been a ridiculous amount of awesome Star Wars information and news and videos and stuff that's come out. Okay. And Danya was actually there for the release of a lot of those things at Celebration in London.
I was. Yes. It was so good.
So, while you were in London at Star Wars Celebration, rocking your Resistance Radio t-shirt, which is available on our website, right?
See what he did there?
See what I did there? Yeah, see how I ring those? Danya, tell us about Celebration. Before we get into San Diego Comic-Con and Star Wars stuff there, but tell us a little bit about Celebration, your experience there.
It was a lot bigger than I was expecting it to be, to start with, because I've been to the XL Center before for stuff like MCM London Expo, and those are usually, you know, decently big, but for the most part, when I've gone to MCM Expo, it all takes place on pretty much one big show floor, and then they have a stage tucked to one side. Whereas with Celebration, they had two different show floors, plus multiple different panel rooms, plus different press rooms, and places where they did press lines, and like different experience bits as well that were off from the main show floors. So this pretty much took over the entire XL Center, which is not something I've ever experienced before from a convention.
Wait, I've been to the XL Center. That place is huge.
Yeah, but like MCM Expo takes place in one part. Like Celebration literally took over the whole thing.
Now, Danya, have you been to any Star Wars Celebration before?
No, this was my first one.
Okay, yeah. See, you know, it's interesting because my first Star Wars Celebration I went to was Celebration 2. For Attack of the Clones, Celebration 2 and 3, and it happened to be at the Indianapolis Convention Center, which is where Indie PopCon was.
Yeah.
And so Indie PopCon, when I went there, I was like, oh, this is itty-bitty compared to the last convention I was here. Because, you know, see, if you guys don't know, Indie PopCon takes place in like a quarter of what the Indianapolis Convention Center actually is. There's actually two different conventions going on at once. And at Celebration 2 and 3, they had not only the entire convention center for Star Wars Celebration, but they also had like the walkways that you go from certain hotels, and certain hotel banquet rooms were also for Celebration. So it overflowed from it. At least in Celebration 3, I remember walking through and queuing up to see George Lucas in one of the hallways from one of the hotels. It's like, that's how crazy it was. So yeah, Celebration is ridiculously big. And I also went to the Anaheim Convention Center for Celebration. No, that was LA Convention Center for Celebration 4.
It sounds like the most beautiful living nightmare you could ever subject yourself to.
You don't sleep much at all, because it's just amazingly fun.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
That's awesome. You also got to see some of the things we talked about last week in person, live, as it was released, like, you know, the reveal of that new character for Star Wars Rebels.
Oh my god. The room went insane. Not even... Because they kind of dropped, like, a little hint as they were going through the panel. Like, they had dropped, like, the word, like, we're expanding the universe a little bit in the panel. So I was like, hold on a second. That's a very...
Are we talking about Thrawn? Are we talking about...
Yes, we're talking about Thrawn.
Wait, Thrawn? I thought we were talking about Grand Admiral Prawn. Have you guys seen that? Have you guys seen that yet? Have you seen that?
No.
No? Oh my gosh. Let me send this to you guys right now, because I was already planning to post this on our website. But yes, there's an entire comic. To defeat enemy, you must know the enemy. Grand Admiral Prawn. And then you have Zeb saying, you look delicious.
Wow.
Oh my god.
Yes, Grand Admiral Thrawn. I am super excited, but of course, Thrawn sounds like Prawn.
It does. It really, really does. But yeah, so when they were doing the actual panel itself, they kind of, like, they dropped the words, we're expanding the universe. And I was like, well, that's a very specific set of words to use together when you're talking about Star Wars, you know. there's only one thing that, you know, you can draw a correlation from. So I was sat next to some other press people and we were like, are they going to bring in someone from the EU? We think they're going to bring someone in from the EU. And then obviously they dropped that massive trailer. And what you got, I mean, you guys have probably seen the trailer by now. It did go up online.
Wait, there's a trailer for it?
Mikey.
I'm joking. I've watched it.
I know. You should, if you could see the look that I was giving you through the computer.
I saw it.
I was like, for God's sake, Mikey, this isn't a game.
Yes, no, yeah, that trailer is amazing. It's actually really interesting, because we talked about it last week. The first half of the trailer is one thing, and then as soon as Thrawn comes out, this back half, it's the Rebels just getting beat down by the Empire. Yeah. It's like, as soon as they introduce Thrawn, it's like, oh my gosh, he is the perfect foil for our crew from the Ghost. It's awesome.
Yes. Yes, definitely. I mean, when you just see him in silhouette from behind, and you're basically like, they're going there. This is a thing that is happening.
So I have a question for you, and yes. I vaguely remember this on the live stream of that, because I did watch it live also on the live stream.
Yes.
They did answer a question from the audience about Mara Jade, correct?
Yes, she's not coming in at all. She is not. Mara Jade will not be coming to Star Wars Rebels. In fact, Dave Filoni basically said that it's a definitive no. They're pretty much not going to be adding Mara Jade ever.
Now, you know why that question got brought up, though, right?
Yes, because she's a huge part of the Thrawn storyline. You know, they pretty much go hand in hand in the
extended
universe.
Exactly. So Mara Jade and Thrawn, as well as Coruscant, what we were talking about, was all created by Timothy Zahn. So the fact they're bringing him back, it's like, and I get it, but like Mara Jade was too much of a story. Like, she's Luke's wife in the expanded universe, so... With the character we know of Luke now, like I'm sure they don't want to touch that, unfortunately, because they want to let the films kind of explore Luke and relationships he has with anyone going forward.
Yeah, exactly. If he has a relationship with anyone.
That's true. Him and his lightsaber.
His girlfriend is the Force, everybody.
Never mind. anyway, moving on. So obviously you saw the Rebels trailer. You also saw Rogue One sizzle trailer. What'd you think of that?
The sizzle reel was really good. It was nice to see some of, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff and how some of the things were coming together, and you got to see, like, little glimpses of new footage of Rogue One, which was kind of cool. But I also got to see a brand new trailer.
Don't go there! Eric, what'd you think of the sizzle reel? Because I know you saw it, too.
I liked it. I am really excited about this movie. Reshoots what reshoots. I'm just really stoked.
Exactly. Rogue One just looks amazing. I will say, though, they probably shouldn't have released that Rebels trailer after Rogue One sizzle reel, because I'll be honest, I feel like Rogue One Rebels made me a little bit more excited than the sizzle trailer.
Even seeing the full trailer for Rogue One, not gonna lie, the Rebels trailer still, like, blew me away.
Because it's, like, amazing! Like, seriously!
Yeah, Rebels kind of upped the game massively, and... Yeah, I got to see the first two episodes of season three as well. So it was like, they're both, like, I'm like excited for both. But Rebels just edged it out slightly for me.
That's what I was saying last week, too. All right, so spoiler alert for everyone. You can hear what I'm going to ask. Danya, first episode of Rebels Season 3, Ahsoka alive or dead? We took bets on it last week.
No solid confirmation.
Two episodes in and they don't let you know? Like, that's the cliffhanger!
Two episodes in and you do not find out if she is definitively alive or dead.
They're doing the Jon Snow thing. They're totally doing the Jon Snow season 6 thing.
I will tell you that the characters involved with, like, the Ghost and with the Rebellion, they believe that she's dead, as, you know, anyone would, considering that situation that happened in the season 2 finale. You know, if she's not back, but there's no definitive answer either way if she's alive or dead by the time we come back to season 3.
Not having seen it, not knowing what's going on, I definitely, listening to you talk about it, I have to get on the Rebels wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you do.
You need to.
But if Darth Maul can survive the fall, then I'm pretty sure anybody
and Mace
can survive.
And Mace Windu.
Yeah. Yes. Anybody can survive anything in Star Wars.
Until you see a body, it doesn't count.
Yeah, right. It's very, very true. But yeah, and even Dave Filoni, when we did like the press room and the press conferences and stuff like that, he was basically saying, you know, he was very coy about it, about whether she's alive or dead, or whether, even if she is dead, the like capacity for her to be able to return, that sort of thing. So there is, in the premiere episode, which is basically two episodes, there's no answer. Yeah.
So, Danya, tell us about the Rogue One actual trailer that you got to see that I haven't seen, Eric hasn't seen, and everyone who wasn't in London hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah, so Kathleen Kennedy kind of came on stage and was basically like, this is not going to be released online, pretty much. She cut and dry kind of said, you know, this isn't coming out, but it basically sort of opened up on, like, a little girl, and she's running away from an Imperial shuttle, and at first you're kind of like, is it Jyn? Is it not Jyn? And then it did, like, a straight cut to Jyn Erso doing exactly the same thing, so you can take from it that was a younger Jyn Erso running away. So after that, there's several huge combat moments, like there's explosions and like fighting with stormtroopers and the rebels literally being marched through Jeddah. So like kind of almost a display to kind of be like, this is what happens if you try and rise up against the Empire kind of thing. They're literally being made an example of, march through the streets. Mm-hmm. So, the opening part of it was very much like, this is a war film feeling. Like, if there was any doubt that this was going to be very central to, like, the huge war between the Rebellion and the Empire, then this trailer will put that to bed. If you ever get to see it, it's very, very war film.
That sounds amazing, Danya.
Yeah, but over the footage, Jyn kind of says, every day we get weaker and they get stronger. This is our chance to make a difference. So she seems to definitely be taking a leadership role in Rogue One.
That's awesome.
And from a little bit that we kind of saw from the panel itself, where they were saying that at the beginning of the film, Jyn and Cassian are basically going to be, that's going to be our central team to start with, before they then move on to meet the rest of the people that make up the team to steal the Death Star plans. But for at least a part of it, it is going to be Jyn and Cassian. So I would guess that they become like a pretty established team, and Jyn like almost rises to a position of power, I would imagine, which means that she's almost the de facto leader alongside Cassian of this team. There were some new aliens, so that was kind of cool. You guys have probably seen the pictures of it by now.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Yep, those pictures are all out now.
Yeah, those pictures, I think...
They announced those at San Diego Comic-Con? Is that when they released those? I think they released the pictures at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, so they were kind of shouting at, like, some other soldiers, and then there was a little bit more of Krennic, and he kind of walks through and kneels, and I think that he was kneeling before the Emperor. So
now, how cool was his entrance into the panel? We came in with the stormtroopers.
Oh my god, it was so cool. It was so cool. Like I was sat pretty much on the far left-hand side of this panel right at the front. So he walked pretty much right in front of me and then around to the front of the stage and then up onto the stage. I got really good seats for the Rogue One panel. I was very, very lucky.
That's awesome.
But the big part of the Rogue One trailer was they closed with a reflection of Vader kind of growing up over this console that's kind of like bathed in red light. And then the trailer ends with him breathing and the whole room lost its shit, basically.
It's awesome. All right. I'm glad. Here's the thing is I'm really glad they didn't overuse Vader. Like, I really want him to be sparingly used in the film and kind of like the big bad, like, oh my gosh, it's Vader. Like, oh man, I'm so excited they didn't use him too much.
He has to kill somebody that we love at the end of the film for it to be like, you know, like justified to have him, I think, for me. Because like, he's awesome, but how is he going to top? Like, they still have to outdo themselves with like what he did before, right?
Yeah. There was a massive spoiler accidentally dropped during the Rogue One panel, and I mean huge spoiler, but it's kind of one of those things where unless you were watching the live stream or you were there, I think a lot of people have kind of made a conscious decision not to spread that around, because I haven't seen it a lot
I haven't seen it reported anywhere, and unfortunately we won't report it either, guys.
Yeah, I'm not good. I will say, just be careful if you are going around looking for Rogue One information. It is probably out there. The spoiler was accidental. The person who spoiled it, English is not their first language. I feel like this was their first big convention. They got a little flustered on stage and accidentally gave something away. It wasn't intentional. But just be careful if you are going around looking for Rogue One information. It is probably out there. Just tread carefully if you don't want a major spoiler, because it is a big one, and I obviously can't.
like as big as an AT-ST or a bigger AT-AT, Death Star sized spoiler. How do you rate this in terms of Imperial craft?
It's like Death Star sized spoiler.
Wow, but not Star Killer base.
Well, it's about the size of a moon, not quite like a planet. So
that's no moon.
It's close. Yeah, close in comparison.
Yeah, but just be careful, is what I'm saying. It is.
Care about spoilers, if you don't care about spoilers, you can
go
find
wild.
It. It's I know.
Go bug Danya on social media.
Reddit knows about it too, so you'll find it.
Yeah, Reddit. Yeah, Reddit will have it for sure.
I've seen it on Reddit. I was like, but I guess it's the leaks forum, so I guess it's there. But, you know. Anyway, moving on. Well, Danya, I'm very glad you're back. Eric, I'm super excited that you're back with us. And I'm just jealous, Danya, if you get to spend all this awesome time at Celebration and Comic-Con. But we do have some news this week, surprisingly. You know, after all the stuff from Celebration stuff, I didn't think we'd get that much. But we do have a few interesting news tidbits, if you will. First one is about one of our favorite people, Mark Hamill. If you guys got a chance to look at this, Mark Hamill receives the Joker's lightsaber.
That's pretty cool.
Did you get a chance to watch this video yet, Danya?
No. I've just put it on mute, and I'm having a look at it while we're talking.
So I'm gonna spoil a little bit about you when you watch this video. You're gonna need to go back and watch it. So one, the lightsaber is done phenomenally. It was done by Ken Hampton of Hampton's Handcrafted LED Sabers. So they make their own lightsabers. You can go to their website, buy them, stuff like that. This was a custom-built lightsaber put together by a bunch of the community who had been buying lightsabers from him. So they paid for it and everything. So it's a custom-designed lightsaber for Mark Hamill as the Joker, if you will. And when you turn it on, it's the Joker's laugh and everything, which is just absolutely awesome. Or Mark Hamill, man, as the Joker. Mark
Hamill just looks as the Joker. So delighted.
Well, the best part is, when he shows it to Mark doesn't realize it's a gift for him. He's just thought he's being shown this really cool thing,
like,
they
this
made.
This is cool.
Yeah. And then the guy's like, no, this is for you. We got it. We made it for you. And it's like, oh really? Like he's like, really? Like, oh, I can't take, like, he's like, this is, you know, obviously it's a custom built one, so it's got to cost some money. But he's like, no, you know, it's been paid for. All the fans bought it for you. And then they give him like the charger, the stand. Then they show him how to travel with it, where the blade disconnects and you can actually fight with those blades. Like, it is so, it's like such a cool video, because like, you just see him. He's like, Mark is like,
he's
this
so
is really
cool.
Like, he's so like humbled by it and everything. But it just shows, shows how much the fans love Mark Hamill, not only as Luke Skywalker, but also as the Joker. So, it just shows that the fans just love him as both the Joker or as Luke Skywalker. So, what do you guys think about this, Eric? It looks like you've had a chance to see it.
Yeah, I love this video. Just at the end where it says, a very special thank you to all of our contributors who made this gift possible. There's 34 names. Just the idea that fans come together in this way. For this something like this. Also, it's probably the coolest mashup of those two communities, of those two properties, that you could hope for, a lightsaber that makes the Jokers laugh.
Yes.
You know, I can't think of how you could do that better. So I think it's really innovative and really like new and unexpected, and I love the genuine nature of his sort of immediate reactions.
Yeah, so one way that you could probably get one better, I guess, is I didn't manage to get the picture up. What happened is the connection was a little bit spotty in Star Wars Celebrations, so as much stuff as I put up, there were still more posts that I wanted to put up but couldn't while I was there. I actually did find a Joker mashup with like Jedi robes and everything, so going
like
around
a cosplayer. Oh
yeah.
Okay, all right,
so there was a Joker in like Jedi robes and it was pretty damn cool looking. So now that I'm back and I'm settled, on our brand new Resistance Radio Instagram account.
Hey there.
I know, yeah. Hey, I forgot all about that. I need to add that into our introduction. I like it.
Yes, I know. So I will put that picture up there. Also, I'll probably put up the picture of the really cool family cosplayers that I found at San Diego Comic-Con. There was a Han, a Leia, and a Kylo, and it was pretty cool. They were a really good little group, so I'll probably put that up as well. Now that I'm back and settled and have full access to Wi-Fi.
We gotta give the Joker Jedi this lightsaber and have video of him wielding it. That would be the coolest thing.
Yeah.
But this is a great video. I actually really like how much stuff is coming out about Mark Hamill, like what he's like to just interact with. Because for me, like, and I had never gone to any sort of Batman or Comic Cons where he was at growing up, but it's nice to see that he's out and about and really kind of rediscovering the fans that have been there for him. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. It just seems like he's more accessible now, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he loves fans. I mean, he's as much of a fan as anyone else. He genuinely just understands everything. Like, I don't know, there's something just so genuine about him, and so really kind of low-key, down-to-earth. Just, he's just a nice, genuine guy. And I think that's what I really connect to so much with Mark Hamill over most of the other actors in the franchise. Like, the ones that are kind of basically genuinely excited about all of this. So, you know, like, John Boyega, Mark Hamill, like, I really, really do adore those guys a lot.
Anyway, moving on past Mark Hamill's awesome Joker lightsaber, Chuck Wendig has teased about his next Star Wars book. Now, I will be honest, I have not finished Life Day yet. Have you finished it already, Danya?
Me either. No. I'm still about a third of the way through. Unfortunately, things like Star Wars Celebration and San Diego Comic-Con kind of hindered my ability to be able to finish reading it.
Darn, but must be tough. Ugh.
I know, but I've got... once I've gotten over my jet lag a little bit, I will probably finish the rest of it. So maybe Thursday or Friday. We record on a Wednesday. I know this releases on a Sunday, but you guys all know by now.
You know, Donya, you might actually finish it before me then still. I'm still working through it. I don't actually, my excuse though is I started to reread Lords of the Sith just because I got really excited for Rogue One. I know Vader's in it. And I just, you know, wanted to reread like Vader in that time frame. So I'm about 75% done with Lords of the Sith, and then I will tackle, you know, Life Debt.
Okay.
So I got about a chapter in before I switched. So that's something.
Yeah, I mean, so far I'm finding it a better read than the first Aftermath book, but I'm finding his writing style is still, it's still disconnecting me a little bit, and it's so weird because usually I really like Chuck Wendig's writing. For anything that isn't Star Wars, I don't know what it is when you kind of mesh him up with Star Wars that makes it not really work for me. It's so weird.
You know, and the weird part is, like, the story, like, when I said I didn't like Aftermath that much, it's not that I didn't like the book. The story is actually really good. You know, it's got Snap Wexley in it as a young kid, Mr. Bones, like, these great characters and stuff.
Yeah, it has, good information. Like, there's some kinda, great
the
stuff.
The story is good, the information, but I just like the story as it's being told, I don't like, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe it's just, I don't know. But anyway, Life Debt is done, obviously. And apparently, it ends with some pretty galaxy shuddering things, apparently. And Empire's End is all about shaking the stuff out, is what he says, and the consequences. And it's going to apparently prominently feature the Battle of Jakku, which we also got a little bit of the Battle of Jakku from. Lost Stars. We saw the Death Star, or one of the Star Destroyers that has crashed down on Jakku, but we don't know anything about the ground battle or anything else. So it sounds like we're going to hear about, you know, the AT-ATs, the AT-ATs on Jakku, the one that, you know, becomes Rey's home later on, and a lot of other things. So that should be kind of exciting to learn a little bit more about that pivotal, a really important moment. There you go. I can't say it right now. It's a long day.
Pivotal is right, though.
Pivotal. I'm just going to move on with it. just smile and nod, everybody. Anyway, what do you guys think about this? It's kind of cool we're going to get the Battle of Jakku written out. I know we had it in Battlefront as a video game. Eric, you played Battlefront. What'd you think?
Yes. You know what? The other cool thing about Battlefront is I got the season pass and haven't yet been able to explore Skirmish and the new stuff that just came out. I'm really excited for it. Jakku is great. Obviously, Jakku, there's a story there that we haven't yet gotten in this form, and even in the movie, it's, you know, what happened here is the number one question you should have in the first 10 minutes of episode 7. So, I'm excited to get the idea that it'll have taken place. You know, the way that I read it going into movie 7 was someone somewhere said it was, you know, a pretty definitive, decisive battle that occurred on Jakku roughly maybe a year after the Battle of Endor. So, I don't know. If they keep the timeline like that, I think it'll be really cool. And if they change more stuff, fine. It's no different. But it's exciting always, I think, to get a story that takes place on a planet we know versus one that is completely fabricated and we've never been to before. That's how I feel about it anyway.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. The biggest thing for me is just making sure I get through the book so I can read this last one when it does come out and know what's going on, if that makes sense to anybody.
Yeah, no, it does. I'm still going to keep reading the books, but again, being a third into it, I'm still having a hard time reading it, but I'll get through it. I will. I'll power through. But I like the idea of learning more about the Battle of Jakku. It's something that I want to learn more about. And if we go into it in more detail and get more information about it and more, I guess, more facts and it being a way of, like, adding to the universe a bit more, like, fleshing out what happened prior to The Force Awakens, you know, that'll be really good, I think.
Yeah, it'll be good.
You know, it depends, though. Like, if I'm having a really, really hard time with finishing Life Debt, I probably will do something like, I don't know, read someone who does a breakdown of all of the major points of the final book. I don't know.
I want to hear the end of it. I'm going to get through it, even if it's not my cup of tea.
Good information, bad packaging.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on from the Aftermath series, we do have some information from San Diego Comic-Con, and you got to see this in person, and I had lots of friends see this. There is an amazing, awesome Hot Wheels X-Wing car. Danya, what'd you think of this car?
It was unbelievable. It was so cool looking. I was just like, we were walking past the Hot Wheels stand. I was walking past it with Karen, who's been on the podcast before, and I was like, Karen, stop. It's an X-Wing car. Like, I want to drive it so badly. Like, it just looked so cool. And there were so many people around it as well. Like, this thing was drawing in crowds, but yeah, it's pretty damn impressive.
So I have some additional information about that Hot Wheels car, because my cousin was actually there. She was working that booth right there with the X-Wing car from Hot Wheels. So from her specifically, it was a full-size version of the Hot Wheels Comic-Con exclusive that you can only purchase on the Comic-Con floor. Did you get one of those Hot Wheel toys?
I did not, no.
Well, you just missed your chance. You won't be able to get it anymore, except on eBay for probably a ridiculous amount. Except on eBay.
I know.
But basically, Hot Wheels released a series of Hot Wheels trench run car ships, which came with an X-Wing and three TIE fighters to chase it. She said it came in a collector's package box, but you needed batteries to really showcase how cool the cars were. And then she also sent me some specs about this car. So this car, without getting into like a 16-valve DOHC engine, I don't know anything about cars, guys, so I'm sorry. But some cool things is its top speed was 180 miles per hour.
I want to drive it.
That's pretty awesome. And there's definitely some videos around to go ahead and actually see the car on a racetrack and stuff like that, and it intercuts it with, like, you know, Star Wars video. So StarWars.com has a great video. Mashable has a great article on it. But this car just looked absolutely awesome. I was lucky enough to... and my cousin worked there, got to see a little bit of it as the show floor was opening. I was like, that's really cool. And I, you know, Danya is in, you know, US, UK, couldn't get a hold of her to tell her to check it out, but it sounds like she got to see it anyway.
I did.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Like, honestly, like, have you guys seen any of the other Star Wars type cars?
Yes.
Yeah, like, some of these cars just look amazing, and this car just was absolutely stunning in the way it looked. It was just, oh man. It just looks so cool. I like how it actually has like a hatch, like for a, you know, for a car. It's just like, it's the coolest thing ever to get into it. Like, oh man, sorry. All right, moving on from the really cool car, because I can't own one like that. Han Solo film. Did you guys hear about this?
I did hear about this.
Yeah, so apparently our buddy Alden here, he signed a 3-film deal. So 3 Han Solo films, a trilogy?
Now, this is the thing with signing a 3-picture deal. It doesn't necessarily mean there'll be 3 Han Solo movies or young Han Solo movies. It just means that he could appear in 3 movies set in the Star Wars universe.
I don't like either of those options.
But I would vastly prefer him popping up as a cameo in other movies rather
someone
than having...
someone else's backstory, right?
Like, yeah, rather than having a trilogy of Han Solo movies. I think one is enough. I already think that's probably too much, but I think one is enough. And then having him appear in other movies. It's the same way, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe works. For example, Chris Evans had a 9-movie deal, but there haven't been 9 Captain America movies.
Right.
He just appears in 9 movies within the Marvel Universe. So he appeared in Thor the Dark World. Right. Very briefly, but he was in it. And that counts. So...
Gives some comfort, I think. Otherwise, once this news broke, I just saw all of the tweets going, "It's called Han Solo, not Han Trilogy."
Trilogy.
I was just like, I had to laugh. I'm like, ah ha ha.
I love that. I love it.
No, but I really like the idea of, well, in by comparison, of him just, like, showing up in the Boba Fett movie or something else that's confirmed.
Yeah.
Because, like, for me, Han is special as a result of the company that he keeps during Star Wars, right? We like seeing how this smuggler would-be rebel, would-be on his own, interacts with the characters that we love, the rest of the heroes. But yeah. Han just alone or with another crew that we don't know, that isn't part of, like, the Star Wars main, you know, cast and of characters, I wouldn't be as interested in. I mean, sure, you could get to like them, but it's kind of like doing Indiana Jones, you know, and he has a different girl and a different sidekick or friend in each of the movies. Like, I wouldn't want them to do, especially when it's not Harrison Ford, I wouldn't want them to do that with Star Wars, even if it were, like, world building. You get more leverage out of just creating an entirely new story, like Rogue One, for instance, which is tangential and it doesn't have anything to do with these characters. So, like, Han, I'll put up with or I'll enjoy, you know, I'll put up and shut up when it comes to one movie, but I'm not interested in three.
Same.
You know, it could be fun. You know, I'm just excited to see what they're gonna do. You know, three films might be a little much for just Han Solo, you know, because then you know what's going to happen. It's like, well, these are really the middle three films. There's actually three films before, and then you see what happens, and, you know.
Well, right, and there's nothing that, to my knowledge, there's nothing Han can do that's going to greatly impact the overall, you know, universe in the galaxy in terms of the Force or the... Well,
hey, Chris, it's a hokey religion.
He's not a Jedi. He's not a Jedi. And then also the Rebellion. He's not going to really be... We don't know that he's some secret hero of, like, there's no mystery there, really, in terms of that. And so, like, anything he does will be, like, side mission in a video game, you know, almost like mini game versus real game for, like, the plot.
One of the things we talked about last week, it was fun having Evan on because he was a big EU fan like myself. And one of the big things about Han Solo in the EU was he used to be an Imperial officer. That's how he was able to free Chewbacca, you know, from slavery, which is the life debt and everything. And, you know, Danya doesn't like Wedge because he was an Imperial defector.
It's only because I think that dude is shifty. That dude is shifty. There's something not right about him.
Danya, I am so with you. That Wedge guy always looks like he's up to no good. I could take on the whole Emperor myself. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I could take on this whole thing by myself. Oh, wait, no, my shoelace is untied. I've got to bail out. Bye!
Yeah, I don't, he's probably a spy.
You guys, get out of here. You can't do any good back there anyway. So let's move on. So there is some more confirmation about Rogue One. Han Solo will not appear in Rogue One, so Alden is not making an appearance in it, and neither is Hayden Christensen. The Han Solo confirmation came directly from Gareth Edwards, and the Hayden Christensen came from Kathleen Kennedy for Extra TV. So there are some tweets that they posted out asking, will Han Solo appear in Rogue One? Gareth was like, nope. And same thing with Kathleen. Christensen will not show up, so we know Vader will.
Do you know, was there any inflection? Like, did Kathleen, like, completely write off the possibility that Hayden would have something to do, Anakin would have something to do in potentially one of these movies? Or is she just like, no, we're done with that fool?
No, I think it just was like, no, he's not in it. And I think it's like, it was one of those things where it's like, it's a rumor. And she's like, no, like, I don't know where you guys got that rumor. Like, it's not, it's off base. Like,
yeah.
I don't know where you guys are getting all of this stuff from. But
yeah,
no.
it was pretty, like, she's like, no. She was all smiles and everything. But, and, you know, here's the thing is, the only thing I can think of with Hayden Christensen was if they did some type of flashback of one of the characters, like, he reminds me of a Jedi. And then they show, like, a flashback or something, like, I don't know, because, like, even then, at that point in time, he's in the suit, so even if it was Hayden Christensen acting as Darth Vader, you wouldn't see him anyway, so it doesn't matter.
If this has been revealed, stop me in the tracks and let me know, but I'm most interested in finding out if, one, Ian McDiarmid will be there, or if James Earl Jones would be lending his voice.
James Earl Jones is voicing Vader. We know that for a fact. That was confirmed. Okay. Ian McDiarmid, we don't know about the Emperor, which I'm assuming why we don't really see him when Krennic is kneeling down. You know, I know for a fact, at least they haven't said it, but it doesn't look like Ian McDiarmid is doing actual emperor work. Like, he's not saying new lines, if anything. Doesn't mean they won't reuse his likeness somewhere. So, anything else about news? This week was kind of a slow week when it came to news, mainly just because, well, it all came out the previous week. Hey guys, let's move on to our spotlight topic, Mon Mothma.
Woo!
So, it's interesting, this character has been portrayed by three people. Mm-hmm. You know, we had Mon Mothma originally, was it Carolyn Blankenstein, in Return of the Jedi, and she's the one who says the line that many Bothans died, you know, to bring us this information. So that's a very famous line, and she's the one who got to say that. Then we have, who's going to be in Rogue One? We have, was it Genevieve O'Reilly? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep. So Genevieve O'Reilly is in Rogue One, and she was also in a cut scene in Revenge of the Sith. So that's really awesome that they I don't want to say reused her, but they brought her back, I guess, even though she didn't make the final film.
That's really actually quite cool.
Yeah. Well, they did a long time trying to get her, you know, find the right person for, obviously, Revenge of the Sith.
And right.
They just didn't make it. And she's like, hey, you aged the right amount of time for this film. Let's
put you in. Let's just use you.
Are you willing to do it again? That's awesome. And then she's also voiced by Kath Soucy. I don't know if that's right, but from the Clone Wars series. So Mon Mothma has made her appearance in Star Wars The Clone Wars, the original Return of the Jedi film, you know, and Revenge of the Sith and Rogue One. She's kind of all over the place. She's a really important character.
Very central, I would say. A lot of things kind of happen around her and through her influence. So yeah, she is quite central to the story, even though we haven't really focused on her very much. But I'm hoping Rogue One changes that up a little bit. And we do get, like, a decent amount of time with her, even if it's, like, supplementary to our main team.
So I almost wonder, and this is something that maybe Danya might know a little more than Eric, Mon Mothma was obviously important in even Bloodlines. Like, she was constantly referred to, even though she didn't really make an appearance.
Yeah.
You know, I almost, as I'm thinking about this, I almost feel like Mon Mothma is, like, the other half to Princess Leia. You know, as
glad you said that. I'm so, because yeah,
she's like the other half. Like, she's the other half. Like, she, you know, she was there, you know, when Leia's mother was, you know, talking about, you know, going against the Jedi, you know, against the, you know, Emperor at the time, you know, during Revenge of the Sith. She helps out with the Rebel Alliance as they're starting out with, you know, Bail Organa, and she's kind of there. Like, you know, even Leia says that, you know, Mon Mothma was kind of like one of her mentors. So, like, what do you guys think about her, like, having an influence on such a pivotal character to the stories?
I love it. I love that pretty much the center of this rebellion is pretty much headed up by two hugely important and influential women. Mm-hmm. Like, that, for me, is very, very important. Because, especially in any kind of military setting, you don't usually see a lot of women with influence. So having two massively influential women at the center of this rebellion is great for me. Both Mon Mothma and Princess then General Leia, you know, that's amazing. And we're also seeing women play a bigger role in the Star Wars universe as well, both with Jyn Erso and Rey. So for me, I love it. I love that she is kind of like the other half to Princess Leia's influence within the rebellion, so, and the Rebel Alliance. So, you know, I love it personally.
So I do want to read two descriptions I've pulled. I guess I'll kind of blend them, but I have two descriptions I pulled from StarWars.com and also Wikipedia about Mon Mothma. So for those who don't know who she is, like I said, she is in multiple places in the films, but she is the leader of the Galactic Senate Loyalist faction. In Revenge of the Sith, Mon Mothma opposed Supreme Chancellor Palpatine's policies during the final days of the Republic. So she, along with Bail Organa, as well as like the Jedi Order, started to see kind of the corruption that was in General Palpatine. Working in secret, she is one of the co-founders and leaders of the Rebel Alliance. She helped found that Rebel Alliance, and she served as a civilian leader during the long struggle against the Empire. That's why we see her in Return of the Jedi, you know, helping give that debrief before they go attack the second Death Star. After Return of the Jedi, what we've gathered from books and stuff like that, she was Chancellor of the New Republic, which we got that from Bloodlines. She also had a major influence on relocating the galactic capital from Coruscant to Hosnian Prime following the defeat of the Empire. So she's the reason all those people are dead in the Hosnian Prime.
See, well, hang
on. I was getting to a point. It just took me a while to get there. But yeah, that's a pretty lofty resume, is that not right? Like, she's kind of like through the whole, like, you could say this whole story is a Mon Mothma story, and she would
Luke
be
Skywalker's the
everything.
Reason all those people are dead.
I would also argue that it doesn't matter that they were on Hosnian Prime. It would be wherever they
whatever
had
system
set up the new
they
Republic,
were
whatever
know.
System that would have been wiped out. It doesn't matter where it was. Yeah.
I know.
Pointing that out, Mikey, right off the bat. Let's not go blaming Mon Mothma for that.
Okay. You know, if Wedge is dead because of her on Hosnian Prime, I'm going to be really upset. So, you know.
Yeah, Eric, did you hear that from the episode where we talked about Wedge?
No.
At the end of the episode, because they were all theorizing
about
what's Wedge
up to. Don't bring it back up. It's so sad.
What's Wedge up to? What's going on? And we were talking about how he was involved in, like, the New Republic in a pretty high position. And I was like, well, if he was involved in the New Republic, wouldn't it stand to reason that he was
don't
on Hosnian Prime and died when it blew up?
Hey,
you know, I tend to believe that Wedge pulled a Phasma, a Captain Phasma, and was like just able to get off right before it blew, you know, from the garbage compactor to like safety in an unexpectedly short period of time. I think he's still alive.
Wedge has an uncanny ability to survive when everyone else dies.
Maybe his old Imperial friends gave him a tip. I think. I will bring this back to Mon Mothma, though, which is that when you're talking about being a senator and interacting with Bail Organa, made me really excited because, gosh, what I love more than anything else in the world to see Jimmy Smits again and see Alderaan, if not in Rogue One, but they could potentially do it in Rogue One, couldn't they?
I'm pretty sure that I can't remember if it was in the sizzle reel or if it was in the trailer that we got that I'm pretty sure that there was a glimpse of Bail Organa.
Yeah, so here's the thing is there is a shot of people are saying there's Bail Organa there, but there was the same shot that we saw in the original teaser trailer. There's a shot and it looks like him.
Hmm.
But at the same time, you don't know because they haven't said anything about it.
No, like, they haven't. But it would make a lot of sense.
It would make sense for him to be there. It would make sense. You know, he's a prominent leader. You know, him and Mon Mothma kind of go hand in hand and like starting that rebellion. You know, we haven't seen Mon Mothma in Rebels yet. We saw her in Clone Wars. We saw Bail Organa in Rebels as well as Princess Leia in Rebels. So it might be interesting if she makes an appearance in season 3 or something like that, really to solidify her as one of these leaders.
Oh my god, that. This is the blurriest, most pixelated photo I've ever seen. This Bail Organa, it's
in
at the Star Wars Celebration. I just looked this up. Yeah, like the from the sizzle reel, somebody was like, but he's being blocked by this alien who has like a computer monitor on his head or something. It's ridiculous. I'm sharing this with you right here, right now. It's the most ridiculous like thing you could ever imagine. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. But Mon Mothma from the trailer that I saw, not the sizzle reel, but from the trailer, the way that she is shown up by is it Jin? Sorry. Who's the main female character?
Jin.
I thought so. The way she showed up by Jin into like accepting her own sort of misfit way of dealing, you know, like she's all discipline, but she learns to have a little bit of fun here and there. I kind of like that idea for that character, sort of how she became this leader, but who also realizes that, I don't know, there's room for some enjoyment out of what they do. I'm interested in seeing how she's characterized, because, you know, if we're talking about strictly the films, you know, coming from the weight of the line, many Bothans died to bring us this information, you know, it's kind of a mourning line. It's not a lot to do. So getting a little bit more length out of, more depth out of the character in terms of she can have fun, she's very strategic, she's successful at making all of this happen. I look forward to seeing all of that actually and be part of the plot.
Yeah, no. You know, it's interesting, just thinking about everything you're saying, how important she is. You know, I really feel like Rogue One is going to be a breakout story for Mon Mothma, and we'll probably see her in Rebels and in other media, just because, like, if you look back at some of the trailer stuff, there is a good chance that you'll see, like, I feel like Dodonna is also in it, too. If you guys remember him from General Jan Dodonna from, what do you call it, A New Hope.
Huh.
I feel like a lot of these people are going to come back, they're going to just be in the background. Specifically, I have a picture for you guys to see as we talk about it. So, and I talked about this back when the Rogue One trailer first came out. But this is stuff like that my friends and I were talking about just at work. But you can see things like Dodonna. It looks like Dodonna or I guess a Hutzel is in the background. And these are all people you see in either Empire Strikes Back, A New Hope, or Return of the Jedi. And they're all the inner working.
This is really cool.
Like, just thinking about this, like, all these people that we saw, because, like, we didn't see Mon Mothma in A New Hope, but we saw her in Return of the Jedi. And you know she was around in A New Hope, you know, right, timeline-wise, but she wasn't there. So I feel like this might be, like, the breakout character, you know, for Mon Mothma, for someone who's a big Star Wars fan, like, you obviously know who she is. Like, everyone's been there. It's Mon Mothma, right? Like, it's that character. Plus, you know, for the longest time when I was a little kid, I thought Mon Mothma was a Mon Calamari, which is Admiral Ackbar. But, you know, I was a little kid.
That would be, like, an interesting twist.
Right? I was like 7 at the time before I realized the difference between those two. Mon was there. It just kind of said, like, you know, same thing. But it's really interesting just seeing, like, Rogue One. I feel like it's going to bring out not only Mon Mothma, but all these other characters that were kind of just in the background and shine a light on them, which is exactly what it is. You know, it's a film showing the Galactic Civil War. So what do you guys think, agree with me that, you know, if you think Mon Mothma will kind of break out maybe a little bit more? Because she's one of the only people that speak in that first trailer for Rogue One.
Yes, well, that's exactly what the appeal is, I think, too. Like, having a character who's been around since original trilogy, you know, even if it was just to deliver that one line or maybe a couple more in that movie, but how it becomes over time iconic. I'm sure there were several versions of action figures of just that character, much like there were of, like, Bossk and stuff. Like, growing up, you could get them. But, like, the idea that it's not a new character, you know, and they're able to reprise it, they're able to bring it into this context, this setting, which is so, like, modern, this modern new film, but the character's been around for 40 years. I think that's really cool, and obviously, like, same with Dodonna, you know, if they're there too, like, the gentlemen behind her are in this movie, and we get to know a little bit about them, it'll be the same thing, where it's like, man, there was so much story there, it just, like, supports the fleshed out, like, expanse of this universe.
Yeah,
I'll agree with that. I mean, it's great. I think it's great to, like, have almost a spotlight on her in Rogue One, even though she is not directly involved, as far as we know, in the team that is going to go after the Death Star plans. But she is definitely in charge of that, and it's going to be really nice to see her working in her leadership role. Like, that's going to be really cool to see. Basically, kind of orchestrating everything, I guess, from the background. Like, that, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing that, and just even getting any more information about her than we've already got, because women in charge, yeah.
I want to, after Rogue One airs, I want to pit I want to start asking people, like, who would win in a fight, Mon Mothma or General Leia? Like,
No. You think they'd fight each other? No, they'd team up and take over the world.
They never would. But, like, I wonder who's going to be more proven in terms of being a great general, because we also haven't seen a lot of Leia being, like, actually leading, right? She shows up on the transport ship in Force Awakens. Of course, I'm not talking about the books. I'm not talking about Bloodlines, which I want to read but have not yet. I'm just interested in who's a better senator and who's a better leader. But I agree completely with what you were saying before, that just the fact that these women are in prominent positions is very special.
Okay. So I have one last question about Mon Mothma before we dive into anything else we might have it. Okay. Would you guys watch, like, so we talked about, when we talked about Bloodlines, how they did a good job blending political, you know, politics in Star Wars. So, like, it just, like, it really worked well. Whereas, like, you know, you look at, like, a new Phantom Menace, you know, a trade blockade just doesn't really work as well. Would you guys watch a political drama, a Star Wars political drama featuring Mon Mothma?
I would watch a TV series, I think.
I would, but only if Jimmy Smits were in it, because I'm just finishing up West Wing, and I want more Jimmy Smits on TV in a political drama.
Yeah.
So what if the live action Star Wars TV show is not so much like the Big Bang, but it's a political drama between the rebellion and, like, the goings on to do that?
Yeah, so it's like the West Wing.
I would watch the hell,
like, only
the
set
Wing,
on Alderaan. Yeah.
But in space.
Or in, like, every new planet they have to go to, and you kind of hear about skirmishes, but you never actually see any of the things. It'd be kind of cool to have her as, like, a central character of that.
I would watch, like, yeah, a Netflix political drama in space.
House
of Cards.
Yeah, House of Cards, but, like, about the Rebel Alliance with Mon Mothma.
House of Cards with lightsabers.
House of Sabers.
Yeah. Oh, man. Gosh.
Just, can you, oh, man, I feel like someone needs to create the fan trailer. Use the House of Cards theme song and...
If they set it on Alderaan, we know that the stakes are so high, you can actually lose the entire planet. Like, that's how far you can go on House of Cards. Nothing is safe.
Yeah. This is the thing about the prequel films, right? I don't necessarily hate the idea of bringing more politics into the story and showing that, because it is something that's very interesting, because obviously that political unrest is what led to pretty much the central conflict eventually that we get from the original trilogy. It's what led to a massive downfall. You see it, like, even in real life. Politics affects life in a massive, massive way. And it's something that's inherently interesting to me, to see how that affects characters and planets and how that changes life and what that can lead to. But I think the prequel trilogy just didn't strike the right balance of everything, instead of, like, giving at least a little bit more, not necessarily action, but rather than just having a lot of characters just walking and talking and walking and talking, like, setting it against things that have a little bit more movement, a little bit more visual interest, and interspersed with, like, actual events that are quite exciting and interesting. Whereas I think something like Bloodlines did that very, very well. Like, there was just enough of a balance between the two. So if they managed to strike a really good balance, I think it would make something with, like, Mon Mothma at the head of, like, a big political space drama miniseries on Netflix. Like, maybe, like, Daredevil-sized series, about 13 episodes at most, maybe shorter. Maybe Downton Abbey-sized, so about six to eight episodes. I think that would be good, I think.
I just think it would be interesting, you know, if something like that happened. I don't know.
And
you
we could have Alden Ehrenreich show up, and that'll fulfill his obligation.
There you go. Shows up as Han Solo at some point in the show. All right, guys. Well, there really isn't that much information about Mon Mothma. Like I said, she's been kind of this background character in a lot of things, but obviously very central and respected by everyone that she's interacted with. Is there anything I'm skipping over or missing?
No, not that I can think of.
I need to review that deleted scene from Revenge of the Sith. I want to know so much about that, and I want to know it yesterday.
Yeah. So I will link to it, like, in a heartbeat.
Like, I seriously think that her appearance in Revenge of the Sith might have improved Revenge of the Sith. It is probably the best of the prequels.
So there's the deleted scene, and we'll just talk, make sure you can talk about it.
Oh, only a minute long. I know we were just talking about the politics and how a balance needed to be struck, and Danya, for the record, I completely agree with what you were saying. Although, this deleted scene from Revenge of the Sith with Mon Mothma in it, I find, actually, I wanted that in the film. I really would have really enjoyed this in the film, because to me, it helps with that balance. First of all, it's Padme interacting with different senators, and they're just having a conversation about how the Jedi are a little bit separate from the politics, and how they can't really necessarily be trusted or controlled right now. And it's, like, I think a perfect scene, really, but, like, the fact that it includes, just happens to include a woman who is not named, but supposed to be a young Mon Mothma. And we get to see Jimmy Smits. I'm sorry. Now I'm angry that this scene wasn't in there.
Not only that, the one thing about this scene that really impressed me when I kind of saw it as a deleted scene was, like, how many people of color are in prominent positions within that group from the Senate? Mm-hmm. And that's not something that you see a lot in Star Wars. It's really rather unfortunate.
And this was back in 2003, too. So it's like, you know, progressive-wise.
And they cut it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a mistake. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. So I understand why they cut it. And when it comes to story pacing-wise, this simply... it hammers into the point of Anakin making a bad decision. Like, and it also almost puts, like, for me, like, watching it just made me angry at Padme.
Actually, I get angry at Padme just watching her in the movie because she's so passive. This is her, like, at least seeking advice from fellow senators about whether she should reach out to a Jedi that she knows or not.
And she's like, I trust him. Well, the Jedi she trusts is... Here's the thing, is I think Padme was played by two different things. She had a good relationship with Obi-Wan and Anakin. And Anakin obviously had his very his perspective skewed by, you know, Palpatine directly. But, you know, here's the thing, is if Bail Organa had gone to Yoda or Obi-Wan or any of the other senators had gone to Obi-Wan or any of the other Jedi, the Jedi would have been behind them completely, because that's what they try to do too. Like, when, you know, they said he's the leader of the Sith, we have to stop him. But then you see the turning point that, like, no, the Jedi wanted to overthrow. Like, that was, like, the corruption in the Jedi Order is what kind of made Anakin's downfall turn to the dark side, which was really Mace Windu wanting to kill Palpatine. Because that's not the Jedi way. Even though Anakin had already killed Count Dooku earlier on in the film, which was, again, not the Jedi way. So that fall is right there. And, here's the thing. It's like, that scene is a great scene for Mon Mothma and all the other senators talking about how they saw it coming. Mm-hmm. You know, they see, you know, the corruption happening. You know, this liberty is being taken away, all those things. And they want to do something about it. But they don't know how. And I think that's kind of, it's almost relevant to right now, all the political things going on in the U.S. and U.K. and everywhere right now. But yeah, it's an interesting scene. I get angry at Padme about it.
I don't know how to feel about Mon Mothma now, because she's a ginger, and they have no souls. So I'm kind of rethinking my thoughts on, sorry, I read that somewhere. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel anymore, guys.
So anyone who is ginger-haired, you can reach Eric at, I don't know, what was your Twitter?
My special Resistance Radio email. Pass it out, please, to everyone.
It's Eric at resistanceradio.net. So send all that
hate
mail.
Go shout at him.
go shout at him and say how awesome having red hair is. But yeah, so anything else about Mon Mothma, guys? I'm going to link this deleted scene so everyone can see it on our webpage, too.
You know, the only person that you need to think of being awesome who has red hair? Mara frickin' Jade.
Yeah! Mara Jade.
Well, okay, I would completely reverse my opinion on gingers if she came into canon now.
She had a purple
She's
lightsaber,
She's canon
bro.
In my heart. Does that count, Eric?
Your heart, Danya, yes. Anyone else's heart, no.
Okay,
I will say, like, Mon Mothma is great. It's just like talking about Luke or talking about Rey or talking about Finn on this show, or Phasma, or any of the characters that we're getting more of. Like, I look so forward to revisiting Mon Mothma in discussion when we have an entire movie of her actions to additionally inform, you know, what she's all about. This is a great character that they could have picked to elaborate on, because she's been here and there. And she was central. It's like they already have this leader of the rebellion. They just need to, you know, let's get in there and flesh her out a little bit. So I'm really excited to find out more about her. I'm really excited for Rogue One. Ridiculously excited anyway. It's just, you know, Mon Mothma is going to be great. I think we all know she's going to be.
See, you know, it's interesting that you bring this up. I was like, I feel like this is why I was so excited when I saw that Saw Gerrera was Forrest Whitaker's character, is that it, like, it's bringing to light a character that we knew just a little bit about, and you know we're going to learn more. It doesn't mean we're going to learn everything, but we're going to just learn more. And this is what I love about the Star Wars universe, is because it's so deep, it's so expansive, that there's so much information. You know, and there's obviously fans out there, and I can say I try to play this line very carefully between, like, being super uber fan says, like, bring back the EU and EU for life, and, like, know every single thing about every single character, to at the same time just enjoying the films for what they are, and just, like, I don't want to overanalyze any single character, but I feel like with Mon Mothma, we're going to get a line, and she's going to say something to Jyn, she's going to say something, and it's going to be, like, it's going to be very pivotal. Just like when she was talking about the Death Star and Return of the Jedi, it was like, I want to know more about, like, many Bothans that died to bring us this information. Like, that one line, so many people have thought about it. In fact, like, I don't know if you guys remember, but when Rogue One came out, they said it's about stealing the Death Star plans. Like, everybody was telling me, it's like, oh, we're going to see all those Bothans die. I'm like, no, that was all for the Bothans second Death Star. That was for the second Death Star. This is the first Death Star. That was for the second Death Star.
I know.
But I know what you're talking about. Yeah, Mon Mothma said that line. And yeah, so it's like, I'm really excited to see where she's going to go as a character. Just because, I feel like it's the same thing with, like I said, Saw Gerrera. Like, it's these little characters that are coming from canon, from different sources and different things, that they're going to be explained further. So I really hope that, like, you know, Rebels does the same thing. You know, we see Mon Mothma in Rebels, because we've seen her in Clone Wars. We saw Leia and Bail Organa in Rebels. I want Mon Mothma to show up there. I want to see the story of Ezra falling to the dark side and becoming Snoke. So, see what I did there?
That's a rumor.
That's a rumor.
You know what they need to do? I just thought of this. Is they need a Shadows of the Empire movie set between, you know, the events.
It's not, Shadows of the Empire is not canon anymore, man.
But they need Dash Rendar, but also they need Mon Mothma, and they need those Bothans.
Yeah, so we'll see what they do. It would be fun to have, like, a between film story that's not focusing on the, you know, the trilogy characters. You know, just because, like I said,
Star Wars Bothans. That's what they should just Star Wars Bothans.
I don't know about that. They're furry little guys.
And you get people who'd be like, I won't see that movie. I know how it ends. And then just have the line from Jedi.
They all die. So
they all die.
Danya, anything else about Mon Mothma?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you all for listening to us ramble on and on about Mon Mothma. So thank you all for listening, and if you want to reach us, go ahead and reach out to us on Twitter at our radio podcast, email at resistanceradio.net, and also we didn't mention this, but we do have merch for sale, t-shirts and buttons, so feel free to check those out. If you order them, I'll send them out to you guys, and a very nice long thank you note, tweet or something. So as always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Eric.
Eric, you're gonna say something about merchandise?
Yeah, I just packed my Resistance Radio shirt for GeekyCon this weekend in Orlando, Florida.
Yay!
Andrew and I will be there, and I look forward to seeing some Star Wars cosplay.
Awesome. All right, see everyone next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye. Bye now. Bye. Bye.